Understood is a resource I have recommended for many years to parents looking for support with learning and thinking differences such as ADHD, dyslexia, and more. And I'm subsequently excited to tell you about their podcast, Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. They cover topics such as how to tell if your child needs an IEP, common myths about special education, and the difference between IEPs and 504 plans. I love how Understood Explains breaks down the overwhelm by unpacking an important topic each season and then drilling down further into key basics in each episode. Most episodes are between 10 to 15 minutes, and episodes are available in both English and Spanish. So fantastic, right? To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of smart, compassionate guests, you will come away with insights and tactics to help you find the agency and space to simplify and declutter your home, time, mental space, and more. Hello, friends. I have been wanting to bring this episode out from the Locked Archive for some time, and I thought now would be a perfect time, given that March is National Reading Month. This interview with reading specialist, educator, and author Amy Mascott is so wonderful. It was originally episode number 13, recorded all the way back in 2015, in advance of the launch of Amy's book with Allison McDonald called Raising a Rockstar Reader, 75 Quick Tips for Helping Your Child Develop a Lifelong Love of Reading. This episode was so wonderful to listen to again as I prepared it for production. Amy is just the most non-judgmental, supportive reading expert ever, and she has a really expansive approach to reading that I appreciated. In fact, Violet was 4 years old when we recorded this episode and not yet reading on her own, of course. And there are tips I picked up from Amy back when we recorded this show that completely stuck with me and shaped my approach to supporting Violet's reading over the years, which was just such a wonderful residual effect. Amy talks about everyday ways to spark reading interest across ages, including even the tiny details like paying attention to copyright and how that impacts things like how illustrations in picture books might evolve for authors across their careers, how to support reluctant readers, and more. Reading is such a tremendous joy for me now. My parents did not have the time to read with me, so I actually didn't come into reading until I was an adult. And I'm now so grateful for what we call in my house QRT, quiet reading time, which is something I still enjoy regularly with Violet. Also, if you need a few more points of inspiration, I have a few mini edits I wanted to point you to. One is how to fit reading into your day, which includes some tips from a variety of experts. Another one on finding new books to read. This episode covers my personal tips for finding new reads. And then a recent series I started on books, which will be totally periodic and as I amass recommendations, but it's 4 recent book recommendations that I found absolutely wonderful. Stay tuned for this conversation with the wonderful Amy Mascott. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you struggle with boundaries and the general complexities of peopling? Relationships are necessary to our well-being, and some relationships are just, well, complicated. A good chunk of the work I have done in therapy centers on relationships, how to own my part of the story, how to let go of relationships that are toxic, and how to navigate challenging relationships in a way that doesn't drain me. And all of this work helps me show up better for myself and also as a partner, mom, friend, family member, and business owner. If you're thinking of starting therapy, check out BetterHelp. This online therapy platform was designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/edit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/edit. As you know, I value stories and the connection that the sharing of stories can bring so much. And if you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, check out Storyworth. Storyworth is all about celebrating and preserving stories. Every week, Storyworth emails a loved one of your choosing a question prompt that you pick. For example, how did you decide when to have children? And what was your mom like when you were a child? Your loved one simply responds to the email with a story of any length. You will receive copies of these emails, and after 1 year, Storyworth compiles the stories and any photos provided into a keepsake book. Funny enough, I was just chatting with a neighbor who told me that her mom gifted copies of her Storyworth album to immediate family members, and literally everyone was crying, in a good, loving way. I loved this example because while yes, Storyworth is a great gift between a parent and kid, in this case, it was a gift from sister to sister that then was shared across generations. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/edit. That's storyworth.com/edit to save $10 on your first purchase. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I want to jump in. I've got some questions I wanted to ask you about the book and about raising readers and about doing it in a way that is guilt-free, you know, for so many busy parents. I was interested, very, very interested to see that you and Allie start off the book in a very non-judgmental tone with, reading is our thing, but we totally get that it might not be yours. And I will say this really resonated with me. I was not a strong reader as a kid. I suspect it's because I never read with my parents. I'm not kidding when I say that. You know, I was 6 of 7. I never read with them. But I discovered a passion for reading later in life. So I'd love to hear about your thought process opening the book that way.
Well, that's a good question. We really wanted to stress to parents that just because, you know, Allie's background is in education and mine is in education and reading, that we understand that it's not for everybody. I mean, I'm married to an elementary school principal who does not love to read. And I think that, you know, being married to him has helped, because though it's always been an activity for me of choice, it's not what he chooses to do. And he is not the exception. I mean, there are a lot of people like you who, you know, did not grow up with that as a hobby or activity of choice. So what we wanted to do is let parents know right off the bat that though reading may not be their thing, we are presenting it in a way that makes it approachable and easy and fun for them to try to tackle with their kids.
Yeah, that's so great. I really feel, I'll get to this in a second, but I just feel like it's written in a way that is just that. It's so approachable. It's got little nuggets of wisdom everywhere that you can just dive in. And it's really, really, I appreciate that very much. This coming from the person who wrote like 75,000 words. And probably people are like, oh, please stop. I need less words.
Well, you know, I mean, you've got a lot of information in your head. You're a smart lady, you know? And the funny thing is with writing this, I'm a lot more like you. Like I could have gone on and on, and in many chapters in our first draft, I did. Allie is a lot more concise and was really good about kind of helping me stay level. Like, no, normal, like the average parent does not know or use the word phonological awareness. So, you know, like bring it down, you know? But the great thing is that both of our blogs are really, you know, focused on bringing kind of education down for parents. You know, to make it approachable, hands-on, and really to empower parents to take on that role of, you know, being their kid's first teacher without overwhelming them, I guess.
Just to jump into one of your specific tips, it was something else that caught my eye. Tip number 11, you say something about resisting the urge to correct your kid's speech and just repeating things correctly as a way to teach them. And this caught my eye and it really actually made me very happy. And I'm not sure if this was your intent, but it felt very much in the lane of less is more and perhaps a response to something. And I was just curious about whether that something was like a tiger/helicopter parenting type intervention, or if it was just, you know, a typical reading strategy.
You know, it really is a typical reading strategy. I hate to, you know, to hit you with that, but it really is just the idea that, you know, nobody loves to be corrected. It doesn't feel good for anybody. But so often, you know, on instead of correcting kids, I'll hear parents, you know, talking with their children or around their children, kind of mimicking their kids' baby talk, you know, like it is so cute when you hear little kids saying like, I want, you know, strawberry jelly, you know, like it's just cute. And then the parents will say, here's your strawberry jelly sandwich, you know, like the same. Right, and that is not helping anybody really, you know, that is not helping our kids learn to distinguish the distinct sounds in the word strawberry jelly. And it's, though it does sound cute, it's just, it's not helpful in any way. On the other hand, it's not positive for parents either to say, no, it's strawberry jelly, strawberry, right. You know? So just the mere act of saying it in a correct way will reinforce for the kids that this is how it should be said, you know? It's just never, it boggles my mind sometimes to hear even my friends who are teachers, you know, talking to their kids in baby talk. And I feel like, oh, it's a huge pet peeve. That chapter was a hard one for me, 'cause I wanted to be really like, don't use baby talk and write in all caps, but good thing Allie kept me down. And
that's really funny. I know. I have certainly had some of those, moments actually of mourning a little bit. And actually Gabby Blair, I saw her post about this. She's from Design Mom and she was mourning a little bit, maybe the loss of some of those cute words. And I definitely felt that with Vi when she started to just self-correct on some of those things. And it's a change, but it's a necessary one, you know, to become an adult or an older kid. So, it's a really good one. I love the idea of just, you know, modeling that behavior.
Thank you. And the less is more, I mean, for so many parts of reading instruction for kids too. I mean, even when it comes to listening to kids reading aloud, you know, we don't always need to correct them if they make a mistake on a word, unless it's a word that really changes the whole meaning of the text, we can just kind of let it go, you know, and that's different for parents. It's kind of like a paradigm shift. We think when we're reading with our kids that we have to have everything correct, but really the goal is to develop kids who are confident, and, you know, constantly being corrected is not going to do that.
Yeah. That's such a great point. I love that. So just looping back to something we just talked about a few minutes ago in the intro, you know, so this is 75 tips. I mean, I feel like this book is just so perfectly suited for time crunch parents, which I guess is probably everybody, right? And there are lots of bullet points, and I personally love bullet points. And I was wondering if you could share just, you know, one or two of your very favorite lightning fast literacy building tips that parents can execute really easily without, you know, a lot of background knowledge.
Sure. You know, one is super easy. Just talking to kids about the photos that are on your phone or in an album. I mean, I say phone because a lot of us have our photos stuck there, but instead of handing over your, you know, device to a child, while you're waiting at a restaurant for a table or at the doctor's office, you know, kind of going through your photos and just generating a dialogue like, oh, remember when we were at the pumpkin patch and, you know, blah, 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 blah. That dialogue and that kind of, conversation, the storytelling that can emerge from that is huge in helping kids to develop their oral language, you know, giving them a chance to talk, to put events in order, which, you know, sometimes we forget. So that's one quick one that you can do. Another super fast one is, you know, if you're reading aloud with your child, and this is more for younger kids too, you know, just pointing to the words on the page and following that left, right, return sweep, to remind them that that's the way that we move when we're reading, left, right, and then return back to the left, you know, that's the return sweep, or pointing to the title and saying the words as you read the title. And it's written by the author and illustrated by. I love the illustrations. Just kind of using those words that are often reserved for teachers, but really parents can bring them into everyday conversation easily. And then the kids are learning, you know, proper book knowledge and what we call concepts of print. You know, that every book has a title, an author. You could point out, we've been really into the copyright date over here. You know, my kids are older, but My daughter's trying to read the whole, I mean, she's older. I say third, she's in third grade, but for her readathon, she's trying to read the whole Arthur series and the whole Berenstain Bears series.
That's a lot of books.
And, but it's kind of a cool challenge because it's great for her developing her fluency or her, you know, confident oral reading. And looking at the copyright date has helped us, you know, kind of put things in perspective with the illustrations for Arthur. I don't know if you, you know, Mark Brown, mm-hmm. like kind of changed him over the years. And so, mm-hmm. it has been fun for us to put, you know, to just point out that concept of print. It's so, those are two easy ones. Kind of.
I love those. The phone photo one is just, I wouldn't have really thought of that. I did see that in the book and I wouldn't have thought of that just because when you're thinking of reading, you're not thinking about, as you said, the oral storytelling. I just think that's super clever and you can do it anywhere. And I'm interested, I'm going to use your second tip today because when I'm reading to Vi later, reading my pile of 10,000 books, because she just loves reading. But I have noticed when she's writing every now and then, or maybe a month ago, she was writing, if she'd write mommy, she'd kind of write it backwards and up. I think not realizing the direction that the letter should go. So that's, you know, that'll be a fun and easy thing to reinforce too. That's a really good one.
Good.
Yeah. So I would love to talk to you a little bit about reluctant readers and how to help them. You know, this is actually not a problem we've had in our house, but I know a lot of parents struggle. And I would just love if you have, you know, a quick tip or two for how to help spark a love of reading when you have a kid who's truly reluctant in that domain.
Sure. So the first thing I would do is start with their interests, you know, and play with that. If you've got a child who's like totally into Minecraft, then hunt around for Minecraft books, even if they're, you know, the gamer guides, because that still counts as reading. And that may then lead to other things. Like maybe the next, you know, it could be like a Minecraft guide, and then it's a Minecraft magazine, and there are different articles. And then maybe it goes into kind of game design books, you know, getting into some nonfiction, who knows. But I would definitely play on interests, number one. Number two, I'd sit down and read with your child. I know that's so hard for some people, and we're all busy. Man, I get it. But we're lucky now that so many great books have been made into movies. And so you can kind of sit down maybe with your child and read that first one or two chapters of Harry Potter out loud. And that, I mean, if your child's not hooked after that, then keep on going, you know, and without the pressure of having your child read it out loud, you just read it and then look at the movie and then do some comparisons. I mean, often we forget that, you know, reading is so much more than just a huge novel. You know, magazines can, right. And there are awesome magazines for kids right now. There are newspaper articles you could pull up on the online or on your device. And even ebooks have so many great features that sometimes can, yes, be distracting, but for those reluctant readers, they can really enhance the experience.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I've also found that just the kids book landscape has evolved so beautifully too, so that it's getting to a point where I know when Laurel was sort of starting to get into chapter books, and I was reading and enjoying just as much the Ivy and Bean series or Elmer and the Dragon. I mean, I was finding the prose like clever and the stories funny, and that made it more enjoyable for me, you know, versus some of the earlier books, which, you know, can get a little boring. Maybe.
Yeah.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
So speaking of reading with kids, actually, so earlier this year, I don't know if you know Jenna from Stop, Drop, and Blog, but she wrote this really great post about reading with kids who can read on their own. And it really made me think, because I'll admit that when Laurel learned to read, I kind of did this happy dance and was like, yay, now she can be independent. And I know, you know, which may sound a little selfish, but I know you know what I mean. And I'd be curious if you could share with the listeners how, you know, your thoughts on reading with kids and how to strike that balance between being able to do your own personal reading and reading together with your kids.
That is such a good question. And you're not being selfish at all. We are all so excited when our kids find some activity that they can do independently. I mean, and we know it's good for their growth, and, you know, it's all good, really. I think that, the balance can be made by reading together, you know, in a room, even if you're sitting next to each other and reading, you know, that's kind of like reading together, you know. And mm-hmm. if your child is reading, you know, a book from English class, say, you know, you can always pick up that book and read it on your own or listen to it on your own way to work so that you can to have a dialogue with him or her about it after school, you know.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's not always easy. Believe me, I'm trying so hard to keep up with my own book club, which I've so sadly neglected the last 2 months with our own book launch, but I will pick up again. And trying to keep up with my own kids' reading, that it's hard. But even if you're not reading, you know, physically reading with your own child, just talking about the books that they have on their nightstand is huge, you know, mm-hmm. And you can flip through the book, man, and kind of get an idea about what it, what the focus is, looking at the title, the back cover, the chapter titles, and asking some pretty simple questions, you know, pull a line out of one of the chapters and say, oh my gosh, what does this mean? You know, laugh at some of the characters' pictures, ask about what the back cover might mean, that kind of thing.
Yeah, those are great ideas. And it actually, you're queuing up perfectly my next question and thought, which is, you know, it's sort of a tricky balance between the whole, you know, doing less and making sure or not, you know, that what your kids are reading is actually appropriate. And I was thinking of this topic because one of my nieces, she was a very advanced reader, you know, when she started reading, and she was just mowing through books. And I think had stumbled in a couple situations where she had read content that was a little intense for her, you know. And so her mom was really stuck feeling like, man, I'm just trying to, it's really hard to kind of keep up on what she's reading. And I want to make sure it's appropriate. But I was sort of curious about your thoughts about monitoring at all or approving books for older readers.
Oh, it is so tricky. You know, I think that number one, we have to know as parents that books are designated in certain categories for a reason. You know, we have the middle grade books, and then we have young adult books. And at least for us, our young adult books are in a totally different section our mm-hmm. middle grade books. And that's for a reason, you know, just because a 9-year-old can decode a book that is written for YA or young adult audience does not mean that the content is good for that child. And so I definitely am of the school that I think that we are allowed to exercise some control over what our kids read to a point. And maybe that starts with like your whole philosophy on parenting, you know, like how open are you about tough topics like drugs and you know, sex and that kind of thing. I feel like maybe the bottom line is that we've got to be open to that kind of conversation from the start with our kids so that they, if and when they do read something that is a little bit more heavy for them, that they're comfortable talking to us about it. I really do look at my kids' books. My daughter is a voracious reader and she wanted to read The Hunger Games. I think she was like 9 or 10. And I mean, I loved the series. I thought it was phenomenal, but it was really heavy. So she begged and begged and begged. And we, you know, I finally allowed her to read it. I gave her kind of a little bit of a summary about it and she read it. And then we talked about it and then we watched the movie together. And then we kind of did the same thing, you know, with each book. But there were a lot of things that she asked. And if she were a more quiet child, if she was a little bit more reserved and not comfortable talking to me about what she was feeling, then I probably would have hesitated. But honestly, Christine, I don't know. I mean, is that the right thing? I'm new at this and I'm learning as I go. So, that's just my, I'm kind of pulling in my parent and educator hat there.
Yeah. I think you've got to do that. You're the person who's going to know your child the best. Right. And it's funny you bring up the Hunger Games because that's the next thing I was just going to comment on, that last year when Laurel was in fifth grade, the Hunger Games was a book on the sort of optional shelf or something in her classroom. And she asked about reading it. And I personally haven't read it, but I just kind of sort of have this impression that there's some very intense themes in there. And so I just put out an ask on Facebook about it, mostly because, you know, I'm open to her. We're very open about talking about anything, but she is a very sensitive kid, and she feels things very deeply. And is a little bit selfishly, I was like, I don't want to be getting up in the middle of the night to deal with nightmares or tears or, you know, maybe she's just not ready for it right now. But it sparked a very intense debate between people who felt like, oh yeah, it's way too early. And then people felt like, you know what, don't helicopter her. And I was like, that's not my intent at all. It's just trying to figure out what she might actually get a good experience out of and enjoy. And this didn't seem like the right thing at the right time, ultimately.
So did she not end up reading it? I can't remember.
She didn't end up reading it. And we found plenty of other, you know, great things for her. And I said, you know what, maybe this might be good like next year, you know? And I think I can't remember what the age brackets are on. I thought it was I can't remember if it's 10 to 12 or whatever it was. I said, you know what, let's wait till you hit the age bracket. I think that's how I kind of went around it. And her teacher said that was fine. And there were plenty of other good books, so it was fine. But I was just fascinated by the dialogue it kicked off and how intensely people felt about monitoring or approving versus not.
Right.
It's very interesting.
I mean, and it's kind of like if you bring up anything, any hot topic, you know, bottle or breast, work at home, you know, work outside the home. I mean, the bottom line is I feel like so strongly that as parents, we just can't judge each other's decisions at this point because we're all doing the very best that we can. And it's hard. It really, truly is hard. And every child's different. So, I mean, the great thing is, like you said, we have so many other good books to choose from. And so if she could find another one that works, then great. I also truly think that every time you read a book, you're going to get a different experience because you're coming to it with, you know, a different set of, you know, schema or experiences. So even though my daughter read it at, you know, 9 and a half, if she would read it again at, 11 or 12, it would probably be a different experience. And I do have to, I'm going to put a plug for Common Sense Media whenever I am at a loss. I honestly pull it up probably 3 or 4 times a week, you know, for programs, books, movies. I lean heavily on that.
That's great. Yeah, that's a fantastic resource. So I have a question. So this is my last official question, but I read somewhere once that a key to raising a great reader is modeling reading behavior. And I take such joy in books now. And one of my favorite things is when we can actually do family reading time, which isn't always possible since Vi doesn't read yet. But in the best case scenario, I'm using air quotes, she'll read the stories she knows out loud, which is quite cute. But I love culling book lists on my blog and would love to know maybe one or two of your favorite recent grown-up reads. You know, like what books have you not been able to put down, have been reading by flashlight? Yeah. Are there any titles that you adored lately?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that you know, this is not necessarily an adult book. It's you know, a middle grade book. My son has been obsessed with the Percy Jackson series. So good. Mm-hmm. I have been obsessed. I mean, it's really cool. The whole series. It's been fun to read alongside him. But I've read The Husband's Secret by
Lane, okay.
Moriarty. Loved it. The Book Thief, I mean, it's a must read if you haven't. I mean, I'm a little bit behind. I always have been. I'm never really, you know, the cool girl who's reading the book that just was released. I'm always a few months behind. So I have to, you know, share that. But the Me Before You, I love.
Oh my gosh. All the tears, all the ugly tears.
Actually, Book Thief and what was the one about the Olympic runner who they just made a movie and he was in concentration. Unbroken. Yeah.
Oh, Unbroken. Okay. Yep.
Incredible, incredible book. Oh my goodness. And I actually just got they have a young adult version that is not as, like there are some really, really intense parts of Unbroken, and I would recommend everybody to read it. It's just phenomenal, and kids need to learn about it, for reasons, obviously, about the Holocaust, but there are just some parts that the kids aren't ready for. So the YA version is one that we have on the shelf. So I'm going to sit down and read that with Maddie.
That's great. That's great. I will say it actually is to your benefit to be a little bit behind the curve with new releases. I share that as well, but it makes it easier to get them at the library.
Thanks for making me feel better. Yeah.
Seriously. No, like the 200 person queue has died down by the time.
You know, audiobooks. There's like lines of my.
Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
Yeah. But actually, I'll tell you another final good one. Cause we are the mothers of tweens, but I'm reading For Goodness Sex by Al Vernaccio.
Haven't heard
Changing
of that
the
one.
Way we talk, it's something like Changing the Way We Talk to Teens About Sexuality and Values.
I have to read that. You know, I'm obsessed with like demystifying sex and puberty and all that stuff. I'm like totally obsessed with. We've talked about this online.
Yeah, so. But this is awesome. And I was on a plane last week and somebody said, the lady who didn't stop talking to me for 5.5 hours was like, the conversation started by, what are you reading? And I'm like,
Oh goodness.
Reading For Goodness Sex, Changing the Way, you know, so it's
there's a way to make new friends.
Yeah, past friends. Yep. Now we're Facebook BFFs and everything.
Oh, that's so awesome. Oh, I can't wait to, I'll link up all of your recommendations in the show notes, but so great. I can't wait to read. So Amy, at the close of our show, which we have sadly come to, we like to share what we call your next edit, which is a favorite tangible action that listeners can take moving forward from this episode. So Amy, I would love to hear what your next edit is for parents who want to raise awesome readers in a guilt-free, happy way.
Okay, I got it. You can't, my next edit is to make a goal with your children, each of them, if you have multiple children, to talk about reading in some way, shape, or form every day. And that doesn't mean that you have to read a novel every day. You can leave an article that you printed out from the computer, from the internet, on the breakfast table while they eat breakfast, have them read it, like, and just talk about it, you know? And it doesn't have to be like intense questioning, but hey, can you believe she said that? Or did you know that all teens are texting blah, 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 blah? You know, find something that's high interest and talk about reading in some way, shape, or form every day. It could be what they're reading in school or what you read at night with them or what you read during your leisure reading. Just some kind of conversation, because if we're going to raise rockstar readers, then reading has to be a constant conversation.
Friends, wasn't that wonderful? I hope this helped inspire some thinking about how to support your kids' reading journey. You'll find the show notes for this episode, including links to resources and related episodes, at edityourlifeshow.com. As ever, I would love to hear your thoughts and questions. Come say hello on Instagram or Facebook at edityourlifeshow, or send an email to edityourlifeshow@gmail.com. I would also be grateful if you would drop Edit Your Life a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a pod-loving friend about the show. Thanks for listening.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.